Hello, this is Sue Lloyd, Vice Chair of the ISSB, and I'm here with our Chair, Emmanuel Faber. And we're recording this podcast after our board meeting here in Montreal. Emmanuel, it's been a relatively short gap, just 3 weeks since our last podcast, when we last left off. We were in Beijing, and it was the night before our Beijing conference.
Yes, indeed. We were in Beijing, and we hosted around 400 stakeholders from across Asia and beyond. I'll just highlight three of my takeaways from the event. And the first is that that's the real gravitational force behind the implementation of ISSB standards. This conference is now in its fourth year, and each year we've celebrated 10 new jurisdictions deciding to use the ISSB standards. So a real driver for that is the perceived benefits of ISSB standards in supporting resilient business in an increasingly complex and volatile world. Second, we are now witnessing a huge community behind the implementation of the standards, and this community was on show at the conference, from development banks, regulators, advisors, and of course the companies and investors at the heart of it. So we're only a small part of a huge ecosystem behind the implementation of the ISSB standards. And my final takeaway is about the support within China and the commitment to introduce high-quality sustainable disclosure requirements, which was apparent from the contributions during this event. But then, Sue, you were directly going from China to Australia. So what did you learn in Australia?
Yeah, so it was a great time to be in Australia, a really great opportunity to discuss the first reports from Australian companies on climate-related information. And it's really good to see the reporting there. I think it's off to a really good start. The reports aren't too long. They're pretty focused. And I think they're good at being focused on meeting investors' information needs. And you can see that companies are really starting to explain their strategies and their positioning on climate-related risks and opportunities. So it's providing important context for the disclosures and the metrics as well. And as I talked about last month on the podcast, companies are starting to disclose quantitative information, not as much as we ultimately want, but it's a really good start. And I know this will improve over time. And I think for people looking at implementing our standards, there's some good examples there in the Australian disclosures to have a look at, including on anticipated financial effects. And finally, I think I'd echo your point, Emmanuel, on community. It was really great to be there. There's a lot of energy. Local leadership is, you know, really essential for the success of such a big change in reporting around the world. And it was really good to see the energy and the commitment from the Australian business community. And while I was in Australia, you were a little closer to home in Switzerland.
Yeah, closer to my French home. And yeah, I participated in a lot of bilateral conversations in the Zurich Climate Week. I participated also to very interesting Chatham House Rule sessions during the week, and I won't therefore be able to share the content of them. But the first was on reporting in the age of AI. I know and we recognize that this is a topic of increasing interest, and how AI will shape the way companies gather and communicate data, and actually as well how investors are using AI to look into the universe of data that are available from companies, including through their general purpose financial reports. And this is obviously an area the trustees of the IFRS Foundation are thinking about. The other one was really on the substance of the business, with a second session considered the impact of physical risks on companies, including through insurance challenges. And, you know, the largest Swiss insurance and banks, asset managers were around the table, as well as a number of international guest participants. And that was a core aspect of the discussion, was pointing regularly to how the ISSB standards are helping direct investment to companies with resilient business models and strategies for managing sustainability-related risks and opportunities also at portfolio level for those financial institutions. So really interesting, deep into, again, the substance of our business in the Swiss community and their international stakeholders. That was last week. So that brings us here this week in Montreal. And our first meeting was on Nature, Sue, was it?
Yes. So as a reminder to people listening, every month at the moment, we're making decisions as we build out our proposals on disclosures about nature-related risks and opportunities for public consultation later in the year. And as people might remember, given that we already have IFRS S1, which already requires a disclosure about all of a company's sustainability-related risks and opportunities that could reasonably be expected to affect their prospects. So if nature is going to affect your business, you already need to provide information about that. So we're really looking at how we build on that to add specificity rather than changing what's already in place. And the first topic I'll talk about this week, which is a good example of looking at where we can sort of build on what's already in IFRS S1, is the topic of nature-related scenario analysis. And S1 already has a requirement for companies to disclose information about whether and how an entity has used scenario analysis to inform its identification of sustainability-related risks. And indeed, our climate standard, IFRS S2, already has requirements on scenario analysis, including that companies are required to use scenario analysis to provide, when they provide information about their assessment of climate resilience. And of course, many nature-related risks and opportunities are climate-related risks and opportunities. So we're looking at what incremental information might be needed by investors in addition to that base that we're working from. And we looked at scenario analysis in a few different sort of settings. One is in the identification of nature-related risks. One is the use of scenario analysis in identifying nature-related opportunities. Then in the assessment of an entity's risks. And then in assessing the resilience of an entity's business model and strategy in the context of nature-related risks and opportunities. So we looked at all of these different places in which scenario analysis might feature. So what did we decide? We had a long debate, and in the end, we decided that given we already have an existing requirement in IFRS S1 on the topic, that we would not add anything additional on scenario analysis when identifying nature-related risks. But we did decide to include an incremental disclosure requirement about whether and how an entity uses scenario analysis to identify nature-related opportunities. And we decided to include that because that mirrors a corresponding requirement we have for climate-related opportunities in IFRS S2. So it's really making that consistent. We also decided that there would be a new proposed requirement to provide information on whether and how an entity uses scenario analysis to inform its assessment of the nature, likelihood, and magnitude of the effects of nature-related risks. And as a sort of surprise decision relative to the recommendations in the board paper, we decided to propose that entities be required to use scenario analysis to inform their assessment of the resilience of their strategy and business model to nature-related risks. And when we made that decision, we were really relating to this to what we already have in IFRS S2 on a similar topic. And in IFRS S2, we have mechanisms there to really make sure that this is a realistic request of companies. And in particular, we've got proportionality mechanisms that take into account that the way in which a scenario analysis should be undertaken should vary or can vary based on the skills, capabilities, and resources of an entity to determine the appropriate approach to scenario analysis. And we decided to use that same set of proportionality mechanisms for the corresponding requirements on scenario analysis in the context of assessing resilience to nature-related risks. Also, what was really apparent in the board discussion was that there's still a concern that when we use the word scenario analysis, people immediately think of really sophisticated mathematical financial modelling, and that isn't always what is necessary or appropriate. It can be much simpler qualitative assessments. And so we're going to really make sure that we're clear in the proposals that when we use those words, it can be a spectrum of different approaches. We actually have some recent educational materials on this in the context of climate, which are on our website, which could be worth looking at as you get ready for the proposals. But Emmanuel, I think you were pretty passionate yesterday when we were talking about this topic, so maybe it would be good to hear some of your thoughts on scenario analysis and resilience assessments in the context of nature.
Well, I mean, thank you, Sue, but I think I spoke a lot
yesterday.
Already yesterday about it. And yeah, I mean, as a practitioner and having been in the space where if you do not take care properly of your soil, your agriculture, the pollination that you get from the ecosystemic services that consume nature, you really run a risk of either physical risks and missing, just the resources that you need, and or transition risks because someone decides locally that there are other priorities for the resources that you're looking for. And so I thought it was an important decision. And I think that because our decision to make this a practice statement and not a standard that would be mandatory, we can be more, and I thought we should be more ambitious in the content with the board. You ultimately decided to go beyond what the staff recommended on that particular aspect. I believe already, and this is my experience, that many companies are facing physical risks with the degradation of nature somewhere either in their operations or at any point that might be strategically important for their business model in terms of the overall resilience of their business model across pain points in their value chains, downstream, upstream. It's very true for water. We discussed that in some cases. And the result of that is that they already are running some sort of scenario to getting prepared to the uncertainties that are in those circumstances. And they're also facing transition risks as regulation to protect nature comes into effect in many jurisdictions around the world, but I would be even more precise. They probably don't even come at the global level as they might have been on greenhouse gas emissions reductions and the Paris Agreement and all the likes. It's really locally why a municipality can decide to just turn the tap on the water availability for the factory because there's not enough water for the inhabitants in that region. And so the transition risks are binary. They can be made very quickly. And depending on whether that is an important part of your business, you might be at risk here. And so all of that is to say that typically, the soft paper was about the fact that resilience analysis is being made at the company level, and I felt it could be important in certain circumstances that the important GPS-based pain points of that resilience would actually be informed by proper scenario analysis and being that reflected at the resilience analysis level. So I'm also speaking too much about it and passionately, so I'll stop here. But that was, I think, a great conversation. I'm happy we turned out to be where we, where we were.
I was going to say, there you go. You sense some of the passion that you said it yourself. So, it was a good discussion, I think. And of course, it's going to be subject to consultation. And this is all about when the information is material for a particular company. So that's always a really important context, I think, for this. The other thing that we talked about on the nature front in the board meeting this week was a reference to some other of the materials of the Task Force for Nature-Related Financial Disclosures, a TNFD, that we can use to inform and support our work on nature. And what we talked about this week was the TNFD's LEAP document, the LEAP approach, which stands for Locate, Evaluate, Assess and Prepare. And it's designed as an iterative and repeatable process for companies to locate their interfaces with nature, to evaluate their dependencies and impacts on nature, to assess nature-related risks and opportunities, and then to prepare to respond to and report on nature-related issues. And we decided yesterday that we would use the sort of the L, E and A parts of the LEAP document, and we would actually refer to that in the draft practice statement, really observing that this may be a document which is a really relevant reference for companies to assist them when they're identifying their nature-related risks and opportunities to support disclosures in accordance with the practice statement. So not something that a company has to do, an available tool, but one that we think is really good to be aware of. And importantly, we propose to note in the practice statement that when you do use LEAP, that you need to do so in a manner that's consistent with the objectives of IFRSS 1. So it's to find those nature-related risks and opportunities that could reasonably be expected to affect a company's prospects. So that was nature. And then we had a session to discuss the feedback that we received last year on the SASB consultation.
Yeah, so we are starting to deep dive into the feedback we got last year on 9 of our industry standards. I found it a really interesting session. I think there was a lot of questions, a lot of input. And it continues to be a learning process for us. That's the first time we enhanced the STASB standards in a systematic manner and approach. And we know it's going to be a multi-year process overall to review the 77 ones that we have. And therefore, again, a lot of learning being at that particular stage as we progress. We reviewed stakeholder feedback on how we describe and classify industries in the extracted and mineral processing sector, as well as feedback on the disclosure topics and metrics that are included. We also heard a summary of the feedback we received on proposed amendments to the processed food SASB standards, and also decided, by the way, to review that once we've established the current dairy and meat and agricultural products that are in consultation now, which I think was a good proposal. I won't go into the sector or industry levels details in this podcast, of course, but I would really encourage those of you that listen to us and are interested to review the papers for further details on what we heard, in particular if you are in one of these 9 industries. Overall, I'd say we've discussed in previous podcast, we welcome the support for the approach we're taking to these to the enhancements, but we recognize that we have more to do to support understanding of the role of industry-based standards to support companies, including smaller companies in their application, and to advance interoperability with other standards and frameworks, particularly at the metric levels, which we will have to discuss more broadly in the future. So I think that more or less concludes our activities this week, other than, more social activities at night, including climbing for some. Next week, we'll be in Frankfurt for a conference that we're hosting with a number of partners, organizations on achieving common standards. So do you want to say a word?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So an opportunity to have a discussion with colleagues at the European Commission and EFRAG on our work to support efficient reporting for those looking to use both the ISSB standards and ESRS. The European Commission is actually currently holding a short 4-week consultation on its simplified European sustainability reporting standards, so the conference is good timing. And from an interoperability perspective, we've been following that work closely, and it will be a good discussion on what we're hearing and how we can support companies and investors. And Emmanuel, I think you're going to be speaking with me at the conference in Frankfurt.
Yeah, I will, Sue, and it's always a pleasure to attend this conference at the Goethe Institute near our office. I'll be there talking about the evolving global landscape, and I look forward to meet a number of our local stakeholders as usual, but especially I will also be listening. We'll have the pleasure to have with us Sven Gempner from FISMA and Kirsten Lopata, the new chair of the SRB at EFRAG, and I really look forward to our conversations together on these important topics. The day after the conference, by the way, we will also have a meeting in Frankfurt of our Sustainability Standards Advisory Forum. That's the group of jurisdictional authorities and standard setters whose input is helping us move forward with our technical agenda. So an important moment at our office in Frankfurt next week. I think, Sue, that's from us this month. Thanks for speaking. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Next month, if you still want to hear the nice voice of our vice chair, we will be meeting in our Frankfurt office and we'll be back with you. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please take the time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. Please contact us on communications@ifrs.org with any questions, comments, or suggestions. You can also sign up for email alerts on our website, ifrs.org, or find us on social media.